Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Noom. Forget one-size-fits-all diets. With Noom, you get a personalized weight loss plan that's tailored to your lifestyle. No food is off limits. Enjoy your favorites while discovering healthier habits. Noom's users love the flexible approach, blending psychology and biology to help you lose weight in a way that's sustainable for you. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 669. Whoa. 669. That's when caterpillars eat each other out.
They just go all over. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nice. More fun, comfortable tour this weekend in Boston and New York. Next weekend in Milwaukee and Detroit. And then Philly. And then lots of cities. Go to funcomfortabletour.com. Katie Levine, what you got, girl?
I just want to remind people that this weekend, that May 2nd and 3rd from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. is the NKLA Adoption Weekend at La Brea Tar Pits. And it's free to go and you can hang out.
Can you adopt saber-toothed tigers and mammoths?
No, just you know, domestic animals.
Okay. You can't domesticate those? I mean, they're in the tar pits. Is that what you're saying?
The poor woolly mammoth that's just like stuck in there that depresses me every time I see it.
Trying to help his kid?
Oh my God, I hate that so much.
Can I adopt a dire wolf?
You know, but you can go look at them.
Okay.
Or look at their skulls. Or
yeah, you can look, look at their skulls. I think that's awesome. What a great place to do the adoptions.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun.
Because the park itself is quite expansive.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of room there. It's a really good. And pop into the Page Museum while you're there and go look
I love
at the stuff
museum.
They pulled out of the tar pits. It's really cool.
It's cool. But yeah, they're going to have a lot of animals and adoptions start as low as $50. So this weekend, La Brea Tar Pits.
That's no money to save the life of an animal.
No, and it's all donation because it just goes back to the shelter, the organization to help animals. Again, so like you're just helping. It's just never ending help.
You're helping. You're helping have a little life in your house.
And then you can have a dog like Scout, who's the best dog ever.
Scout's a fucking amazing dog. Scout.
Yeah, she just lies on the ground.
Yeah, that's pretty much. You do say she is active in other towns.
She is. Okay. She is, I swear. One of our loyal listeners, Diane Martin.
Yes.
You know Diane.
Die Hard, yes.
Yes,
Diane Martin's been to more live Nerdist shows and stand-up shows of mine than I think she has the record.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what the number is, but she travels around, and I did her podcast.
That's awesome.
A handful of months.
Well, as I was going to say, she has a podcast called The Die Hard Podcast, and it's D-I-H-A-R-D.
I know I did it.
I'm not telling you.
Them.
I'm telling
the listeners. Okay, all right. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to jump on
that. It's about everything she's passionate about. It's also about self-discovery. And occasionally she has people on it like you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's about comedy and whatnot. You can find it everywhere that podcasts are. But also you can go to diehard.info.
Excellent.
Also, our friend Nate Margetzi has his new one-hour special on Comedy Central airing this Saturday, May 2nd at midnight. It's called Full Time Magic, and it's really funny. I've seen clips from it, and Nate's the best.
Yeah, so. Nate's great, and he's been on at midnight a bunch. And
Nate's one of my favorite people, and he's also we're in our fantasy football league together, and he's won for the past 3 years, but dynasties end, Nate. So.
Oh, my God, watching you talk shit.
I hope he listens to this. I hope he listens.
I didn't expect...
All dynasties must end.
Expect you to sucker punch someone. Oh, Katie, please do more stuff like that. So does our old friend Eddie Pepitone, who has a new album called In Ruins. It's available on iTunes now, so you should go pick it up because Eddie is one of the funniest people I know.
He's great. He's so funny.
I love
watching him get angry.
I used to love doing... We did open mics together. Like, I did open mics with Eddie, and it just... you know, he was one of those guys that you, wherever you were, you would come back in if you were outside, like working on your notes or whatever, you'd come back in to watch Eddie perform. Yeah. You'd hear him.
Yeah. And then he'd
summon you and you'd come back in. So here's Nerds Podcast number 669 with Eddie Pepitone.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
We've officially started the Nerdist Podcast with Eddie Pepitone. Eddie?
Are we on? Is the best.
Hey, get in line. He's asking you a question.
Get in line.
That's all I'm here for now.
Wait, do you mean he needs to get into behavioral line or get in line to get a question asked of you?
I think it's a bit of both. I think he needs to get his act together just so he can get in line to have a question asked.
Do you feel like he's not in line at the moment?
I think he's ill-prepared. He's snacking.
Yeah.
Excuse
me, Eddie. This is private.
Listen, I'm just trying to prepare you for when you get out there and the things are going crazy. And yeah. Eddie's going and doing his
thing. Sometimes it's hard to control him. Like, he's just going to take over.
Exactly.
And
you need to train for that.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
I'm doing a mental gymnastics routine
right,
in my head.
I'll guide you. Up, down. Up, okay. Down. Up, down. Manic depressive. I think you're ready for Eddie.
Okay, good. We'll cut all this out.
Yeah.
Eddie, how's it going? Good to see you.
Hey, I'm here in line.
You know, Joan, I don't like his tone already.
I'm so sorry. You know what? Like, go back outside. I'll vet him for a little bit. We'll do a pre-interview, and okay. Then we'll try and get. I'll walk outside. Hey, how's it going?
Good. What will we be discussing?
Don't
today?
Worry about it. I'll be right back. This guy's a fucking maniac.
I just had to run back in.
Sorry, I said this guy's a fucking maniac.
Oh, okay, good. Sorry. Need to do better Foley work. Eddie, why do you dream about red birds attacking you at night?
Chris, you know, my dreams have gone from red birds attacking me at night to now my parents. Now, this is a weird one.
Okay.
My parents, it's reminiscent of, I think it was called Apocalypse Now. No, not Apocalypse Now. Where's the one with Brando? Put his, you know, his last really good acting role is like
the freshman. Dr. Moreau.
The freshman. And Dr. Moreau is very funny too. Both, yeah, that's it for me.
Okay.
I can't. This is too good. He goes, "We are the straw men. We are the hollow men." Oh, so he was Kurt. So that was Apocalypse Now.
Right.
When he was Kurt. So lately, my dreams have gone from where my parents are inflatable. And my shrink, no, I'm serious. Like, I went to hug my mother in a dream recently, and all the air went out of her. And I woke up. By the way, I see your faces have gone from this funny little Foley bit.
Hey, the Foley was a detail, it wasn't the whole bit.
Oh, I'm leaving again.
Holy shit. Maybe we shouldn't have set the tone
okay.
with Foley.
So the air's going out of your mom. Yeah, the air's going out of your mom.
Was it say and I love you?
Yeah.
No, it should be I forgive you.
And I'm hugging her. And
you're killing me.
And I realize that she's empty. Now, you don't know what great fodder that is when you have a shrink through AFTRA.
Yeah.
That is such great. I don't know about a regular shrink, but a shrink through AFTRA with that kind of fodder.
Now, let me ask you, are the other patients, do they have headshots all around the office signed? like a
Thanks
dry cleaner?
Really through a lot. I love your dry cleaning.
Oh, the kid from Growing Pains is up here. That's great.
Thank you. I didn't like just headshots that say, thank you. I didn't get any better. I'm still a raging narcissist, but thank you anyway.
Right.
You know, Jill Clayburgh. By the way, that was the only actress I could think of in that moment. My improv skills have gone so downhill. You know,
your improv skills are fine. It's just your reference well.
My reference well. Thank you.
Yeah.
My reference well ever since falling off a bike on Chandler on the Chandler pathway in Burbank has really gone to hell. It's, you know, when you fall sometimes off a bike and you're trying to reference thing, the only thing you can think of is either Jill Clayburgh or Bert Convy.
The two of them together. And so she will always represent a female reference that you have to, and he will always represent a male, an actor. He was sort of an actor. He was a game show host, an actor.
Yeah, game show host, actor. Terrific pictorial acting. What was that game show he did where I think toward the end of his career, he was doing picture stuff.
Was he doing Pictionary?
Did he do
win, lose, or draw? Did he do win, lose, or draw? Yeah,
that might have been it.
Or did he? Or did he also do like Tattletales?
Tattletales. But anyway, my mother's empty. Like, and so just bringing that into the After Shrink, you know, my mother's just empty. It's like deep stuff, you know.
Yeah,
deep stuff. So that's why the Red Birds are just the tip of the Pepitone psychological matrix of, you know, horror.
Now the Red Birds are just a design on the dress she's wearing as she deflects in his arms.
I haven't heard anything crazy like that since Sissy Spacek and Jerry Reed. Sorry, I'm just
trying to.
Well, I'm just trying to make
Who's
references.
Jerry Reed, though?
Oh, come on.
Do I know Jerry Reed?
You never saw Smokey and the Bandit?
I loved it.
Oh, Smokey and the Bandit. No, yeah. I only remember Jackie Gleason and Burt Reynolds.
You don't
from
like
those
any
movies.
Trucker movies from the 70s?
Oh, no. I do not like Ice Trucker, you know, because I just don't like truckers who I don't think they should get a lot of TV time. Really. Don't you
now,
think so? I mean,
a lot of truckers listen to the podcast. And you just totally.
Oh, I'm sorry. No.
What is your, you know, not to pry too much because this is all confidential, but what does your therapist say about you hugging your mother and she deflates?
She said, well, it's one of those dreams where it's hard to screw up that symbology. Obviously, she wasn't there for me.
Right.
You know, there wasn't a lot there.
That's not what I took from it.
What did you take from it?
That you are overly affectionate with your mother, and you're just blowing the life out of her.
Buddy. You know what? You're the kind of shrink that would really set me.
Jonah's not any kind of shrink.
What are you talking about? I've watched Mumford many times.
I don't know that reference either.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a movie.
Was Clayburgh in that?
Clayburgh was not in that, so you wouldn't know it. It was Clayburgh. Right,
no, she was in Dancing as Fast as You Can. And terrific.
So good. And then Unmarried Woman, I think, was another film of Jill Clayburgh's.
That's the one I remember.
Yeah.
Where she finds out someone was cheating on her. And the thing I remember most is when she throws up by a mailbox that never left me. You know how, like, just certain scenes in a movie, not even a great movie, but just stay with you. Like, her, like, finding out that her husband was cheating on her and her going to a mailbox. I think it's because I have such an antagonistic relationship with the post office. You know? I remember her throwing up by the mailbox because...
Why do you have an antagonistic relationship with the post office?
Because, I don't
know about
you.
Relationship with blank.
For me, you know, earning my money through checks coming in, my checks come in the mail, and I'm always on tenterhooks like a dog. Like, I hear them when they're in the hall of my building. Not to brag, I have a building.
The whole building?
What?
The whole building?
It's not mine.
Oh, okay.
Well, then that's not really a brag.
Yeah, it is, and I was just trying to make it look good, but I hear them. I think I hear them, and it turns out not to be them. My dogs get upset, you know, when my dog.
So you're blaming the post office that it's not them. You're blaming the.
Yelling at the audience that's not there for the show.
You know, I don't understand this whole adherence to logic that everybody does. Especially, we're so irrational. Everything is so irrational. I mean, I brought up psychiatry. I mean. Who hugs a mother who's inflatable? Nobody.
Right.
You know? And now I'm being called out on the fact that Let me ask you this question.
Is your mom a blow-up doll, or is she just inflatable?
Ooh, now that is a really good question.
Right?
And I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
What is the difference between a blow-up doll and an inflatable doll?
One of them is...
one of them you can fuck.
One of them is a sexualized... Like, one of them is
a
sexualized...
Fuck. Being, and what?
I mean...
Hold it. I thought anything inflatable you could fuck. That was my...
That is not right.
No, if
a
you,
ball, a beach ball is inflatable.
But if you
can
deflate,
you fuck a beach ball?
Say again. You have never fucked a beach ball. Is that
you
what you're
can,
saying?
Because it wouldn't. It's not made to be fucked.
No,
oh,
it
really?
Is. It's just you're in kind of a race. You know, like once you
Listen,
start, it's like
I,
you got
to brag, but I can't fit in it. I can't fit in a little blowhole. You can't. You can't.
Why
can't
you fuck a beach ball?
Because you'd pop it.
What?
You would pop the beach ball if you tried to fuck it. Right. A blow-up doll.
No,
and then you wouldn't be invited back to another Dave Matthews concert.
Yeah.
Oh, is he really known for those balls?
I just imagine those outdoor concerts where they're just like knocking a beach ball around and then someone's got to fuck it during Crash.
Hey, where's the beach ball I sent up, Margaret?
I don't know.
Holy God, what the hell is that?
That was for us.
Hey, you animal! You new animal.
I'm sorry, I can't fucking hit the beach. There's too much sand.
No, but that is a good question. I think she's a blow-up doll.
Interesting.
So that's sexual then.
Well,
maybe.
Well, every mother is sexual, is she not? Now tell me.
Take that back.
Well, hold on. No, I'm serious, Jonah. You're telling me you never had a sexual thing for your mother? By the way, this podcast, like, it immediately went to such a.
Yeah.
All the truckers are like, oh, shit, I don't know if I can take this.
They're talking about mom's getting breaker bigger 69.
I've seen a lot of road ham out there, but I never.
You know what? I tell you, I took a Thanksgiving. Some guy gave me a piece of ham for the road, and I kept on calling it road ham.
Really?
Yeah. And then I felt like Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Really? Aww, yeah. That's great.
Are you into puns lately? Are you starting to do that?
Increasingly, as I get older, here's the thing: I'm not ever going to become a father. I'm never going to have a child.
Why do you say that?
Because he lacks the plumbing to he can't produce foster. Yeah,
I tried to fuck a beach ball once, and now it's no more.
You can adopt.
No. I don't want a kid. And then my wife.
Me too. Me too.
Kid.
So we're on the same page there.
But you gave me the same response that everyone gives a married kid.
I know. Even though I'm exactly like you, I felt like attacking you.
It's what happens. And this is the thing. It's like for people like me, like it's always like, they go, you don't want a kid, but Deanna wants a kid, right? I go, no, she doesn't want a kid. And then the next question is always like, well, how old is she?
How old is she?
Because she's going to want one.
Moderately sexist there.
So. Yeah, it's a bit sexist.
I agree with you on that, by the way. We're way, way, way too overpopulated. I mean, just in L.A. alone, just on La Brea alone. I mean, just, you know what I mean? Like, there are so many people.
You're building. It's got too many people.
My building.
So many people that you think the postman's always coming, and it's always someone else in the building just getting away. Those are basically, those are the missed opportunities to not have people in your building.
That's a very good point.
So good for you for doing it. I mean, and plus with the oncoming, I think eco disaster will be first. I mean, seriously, that is absolutely, I don't think that is avoidable. The eco catastrophe, and I don't mean to take it away from, you know, having sex with my mom right now, but I really think the eco catastrophe is coming. So good for you for not adding to that horror.
Yeah, I don't want to have to do
it. It gets sad when you're older, though, because I'm now 56, and again, that's not to brag. and
that's right. You're still wearing a penguin T-shirt,
dude. I have not outgrown that shit. But you know, it gets a little sad when you're older because you're like, well, who do I give this $300 to?
Right,
that I've accumulated.
You leave it to the dogs.
Someone else's kid.
True. You leave it to the dogs.
Yeah. No, I don't want. Especially watching the I watched that show Walking Dead, and then I'm just trying to make it casual. Try not to make it seem like it's a plug for your.
I appreciate
show.
That. Thank you.
But there's like, you know, they're in a post-apocalyptic situation, and he's got a kid that, like, what if you don't know if the world's going to end? What if you have a baby when that happens?
And that baby's a fucking car alarm for zombies.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That is a beacon. Yeah. The baby is just like, come get us, come get us.
Did they have I haven't watched the show, but did they have a kid in the apocalypse? Like, that to me.
Yeah, within
why
it.
Why do
yeah,
people
yeah.
continue to have them all the
well,
time?
Well, because fucking this really feels really good. And,
do you have a kid?
No, I don't have a kid.
Okay. You don't want him.
You said that rather defensively.
I don't have a kid. No, I don't know. I
you
mean,
take
maybe,
that back.
Maybe at some point I would. I'm not 100% never.
Right, you're not going to say never.
I'm not 100% never. I can envision getting to a point. Thank you, Kyle. I can envision getting to a point in life where I'm like, you know what? Everything's pretty comfortable.
You've bought enough stuff for your house, and you're like, there's still that one room. Oh, kid.
But I hope you
I look at all the stuff in my house, I'm like, oh, yeah, a kid would ruin all this great.
Just run into the saber-tooth tiger.
I hope you would be a Harry Chapin type of dad. And what I mean by that is not a guy who's going to die on the Long Island Expressway head on, but a guy, and that was for the ice truckers out there, but or the truckers, but a guy who isn't around. You know that famous song, you know, and the cat's in the cradle.
That's not Harry Chapin.
Yes, it is.
What?
That's Harry Chapin.
Isn't Harry Chapin?
Yeah. Everyone thinks it's Cat Stevens.
What?
People think it's Cat Stevens. You said Islam.
Why don't
no,
you
I didn't think
that's
it was
Harry
Cat
Chapin.
Stevens.
You think it was...
I don't know.
It's not Bert Convy, my friend.
Are you sure it's not Joe Clayburgh? I think it's Joe Clayburgh.
It's not Christopher Cross. It's not Kenny Loggins.
Dad, will you throw me the ball? It's all about a fatherhood. Yeah, right.
Every time I talk to my brother, always asks me to hang out, and I'm always a little too busy to do that. He'll call and be like, hey, you want to go do something? I was like, I can't tonight. He's like, what about tomorrow? I was like, I don't know about tomorrow. He's like, oh, okay. And then I just start going, cats in the cradle. So, or just getting off the phone with my dad before.
That feels a little shitty
when I do it?
No, when I do it. You know, when you're always like, oh, I can't.
You don't want to hang out with this brother either?
How about Wednesdays?
I think this might be someone else's.
Oh, Wednesday's no good.
This has cinnamon in it?
Oh, shit.
Do you have cinnamon?
This is just coffee. This is just black coffee.
Then your heart explodes?
Yeah. Oh, good. All right. Did you put... Oh, yeah, cinnamon. All right.
Sorry, I didn't mean to derail this conversation.
No. I just had a sip of black coffee, so we'll see how that goes.
Then just a little...
Oh, right. You do decaf.
Mm-hmm. That's all right. Just
little blood
down that, like I just scannered someone.
Yeah.
from a sip of black coffee.
From a one sip of black coffee.
Just a simple sip.
So back to fucking your mom. You are.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say sexualizing
your mom.
I was on my way. I must have been in first grade or kindergarten or something like that. But I was drawing a picture of my mom, like a smiley. We're real vivid memory in the car on the way to school. Circle face, put long hair. That's my mom, and it's like. And then, like, I started drawing the body, but then I drew tits and a bush on it.
Oh!
And then she's like, "Well, don't do that," and just crumpled it up. And, like, wow. I think that was her like giving me the signal. It's like, "Well, we're not going to go that way."
No.
Yeah.
But you wanted to go that way, and I understand that.
That's something that Kumail continues to do. That really, it's like I know he's doing it to joke around, but he won't stop casually bringing it up, like every once in a while, that how much he thinks my mom is sexy.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh man, I just was thinking about your mom again. like,
oh my god!
Even as a joke, at a certain point, it does poke at a nerve. You're like, hey, I'm a comedy guy, I get it.
Yeah, I know part of the joke is that you keep on doing, but please don't keep on doing it.
Please stop it. Please stop it. I know it gets funnier the more you do it, but I really wish it'd stop.
Yeah, I remember the first time I heard like a your mom sucks joke, and some kid got like really upset. He's like, you don't fucking say that about my mom, and I remember telling the kid, you know, he doesn't really know your mom, so that's just there's no basis in fact on that thing. And then my kid like was like, oh, you're right.
Yeah, but it's just any taunting as a kid, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Even if you just said to you like, look at your shoes, even if there was nothing weird about the shoes, we'd be like, stop it. Like there's just something about the. There's just something about the dynamic of taunting that we don't grow out of as comedians, apparently.
Yeah, everything is an insult.
Why would you say that?
Why would you say that?
Why would you say that?
Well, why would you then say
why
that?
Why would you say that?
Why would you say that?
You want to step outside?
Why are you looking at me like...
I'm not looking at you. I'm thinking about my mom right
now.
Remember
when I used to do sound effects on the show?
Yeah, I do.
All right, guys, I'm going to get in my helicopter. Eddie's here. He just came up on a Segway.
You love old radio, huh? It looks that way.
Well, yeah, let me turn this one on.
Parakeets. Well, they have some parakeets. What is this? This is
fire. It's a fire.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I didn't think of that.
What is it? It's a thing that's going to get people to turn the podcast. What are you doing? You sure are a good tap dancer. Slow, though. Oh, salsa.
I can't do it.
It's not working. It's not working. Yeah, it's... I don't know if I... I mean, I can't think of if I... I don't think I've had any dreams like that. I honestly can't think of any dreams like that.
Yeah, those are total, like, anxiety dreams.
And it's not... They're not... It's not literally a sexual dream, right? It's representative of something.
Right, yeah. Right. I think for me, it was just like my mom not being there, you know, that kind of thing.
Aren't most dreams supposed to be what the want is? Am I wrong with saying that? It's like it's kind of represents what
some of them are actually what's hilarious about dream interpretation, and it is funny. And by the way, why do they always say, like, I've always heard this, that if you tell someone else your dreams, you're boring them to death. Have you heard that? Like, please don't tell me your dreams. Like, I hear this a lot, especially on Twitter.
I don't know until Martin Luther King that.
He was the one guy.
He was the one guy.
By the way, before
this one guy in the back row, I have a dream. Here we go.
Boring. No, but what people don't know is all the other dreams King did publicly that were awfully boring. You know, like, so I remember when I was being chased by a clown with scissors.
But then it wasn't.
And they were like, oh, come on.
All right, I'll get you back.
I'll get you back. Okay, here we go. We're just going to let it flow.
Ooh, another one that I had was my car wouldn't start.
You know how it was my car, but it wasn't really my car. Yeah,
that's the one.
And
and then the car took off like a spaceship, and then there were flying dogs.
So all these flying dogs were around, and I was like, but I wasn't as scared of them. I was like trying to pet them, and I could fly for like a minute, but then I fell.
By the way, this was...
Then I was trying to run, but it was like I was in quicksand.
Yeah, these are all the very famous I had a dream speeches.
I had a dream. Yeah, this is the compilation.
I'm glad he brought his A game to Washington.
Right.
Those are all the ones he was workshopping around, the club circuit.
I can't tell how offensive people are going to think this is. I can't even try
it. That's all in good fun.
I think it's in good fun.
This is why Max, let me make it even a little tenser. This is why Malcolm X broke with Dr. King. Malcolm X, they say it was because Malcolm was more into, like, we need to do it by any means necessary, where King was like, no, it's got to be peaceful nonviolence. And most people think that's the reason, but it was King's dreams that Malcolm had a problem.
Like,
Not another dream! please. Yeah.
Can we talk about the here and now, please? So what does your therapist think? Are you okay? You fixed?
You know, I don't know if you've ever been. Have you ever been in there? Here's the thing. It's so – this is what – for me, being an instant gratification freak and wanting everything right now, like I always think therapy is going to complete – like I'm waiting for the one session that's going to completely heal me. This is my crazy mind. Like this is it. Today I really feel on top of what I'm going to talk about, and I think I'm at the kernel of what's been wrong with me.
You're at the one-yard line and you're about to – yeah.
But it never happens that way. It seems to be like – just this very slow, incremental, like kind of understanding of how the hell my mind goes.
I know, because it's you don't. It's not just like in one moment. Well, it's all done.
I'm waiting for a certificate. And, Eddie. You are healed. Everybody. And all the actors, all the after SAG actors are waiting for me. Like there's a big commencement, a therapy commencement. Everybody just going, oh my God, this guy overcame all his pain.
And
all this
pain. That's actually very frustrating because you can feel like, I got it. I figured it out. And then the next day you're like, God, fucking fell. I thought I had it.
Yes.
And now today I just fell on my face again.
That's the worst thing, when you're like, oh my God, I really understand what I am doing. And I really feel like I know what I'm doing. And then you fall back into it and you're like, holy shit.
Yeah. It's like mental health is on the tip of your brain. And so it's just, oh, you're always so close.
Then I
want to
quit. Sometimes I want to quit it and go, you know what? This really doesn't work. But I think the purpose of it is it does keep me like vigilant about like my really bad behavior. Like it keeps me from really going off like
It helps to sort of get it out so you can kind of put it into the physical world and deal with it.
Yeah.
You know, I find that one of the biggest struggles I think people can have is maintenance. Just maintenance. Like it's fun to start a project. It's fun to get super excited about a new thing or a new person or a new... And then a new job or a new hobby.
Yeah.
But then at a certain point, it's just when it's sort of leveled out, and it's like, no, I just got to keep this afloat. Like maintenance, I think is so much more challenging. And and as a younger person, I was certainly this way. But I feel like I know so many people, particularly in the artistic community, who are addicted to starting things because of that rush of like new thing energy. And then once new thing energy dies out, they don't finish.
But
that's what's like, I mean, that's, it goes so hand in hand with an industry like this, with entertainment, where it's just like, it's all project based stuff. You get to start a thing and you do it and then it wraps up and then you get to start a thing and you do it. It's almost the idea of that feeling. I think that's why a lot of people head into the arts in general, because it's all project-based progress.
You know what I think it is? I think people don't feel like they're being creative unless they're quote-unquote creating something new. It's like if it isn't brand new, like you know how you come up with an idea and you're very excited just the way you were talking about, but then to tweak it and workshop it and kind of like form it, for me, that's never been...
Well, I think you just don't get an endorphin rush when you're like, well, I just got to make sure all the screws aren't rusty, you know? Right, I just got to make sure everything's tight the way it should be.
It's very funny. In the last episode of John Oliver, like, the whole episode was about infrastructure and how none of it's being taken care of.
God, he's killing it.
He's killing it. But it was an amazing thing about how just, like, there's so many bridges in the states that are considered, like, dangerous or, you know, like, deathly. And he just talks about how it's like that American thing. It's like, we just love building new things, but we don't take care of our stuff.
No.
And so, like, it's because it's not exciting. And then
War. We love spending trillions on war and none on bridges. But I think there should be a reality show now where they always have a camera on each bridge in America to see when it's going to go down, you know, and just be like, okay, here. And they know every car that's passing is like, here's Bob Fredericks and his family.
Is he going to make it?
Yeah.
Look at those bolts. And they also have cameras on the bolts on the bridge.
Yeah,
so
they can see him
watching them.
We'll notify his family via tweet. Make sure to hashtag Bridges of Sadness.
And that was
you
crazy.
You are good at it. You know how to pitch a show.
That was the thing about it, too. It's like they once built a bridge under a bridge so the debris from the older bridge wouldn't fall onto the road.
Oh, my God.
Like, that was one of the things. Like, I think that was in Pennsylvania.
You know, what was super freaked out is that I used to have a lot of weird phobias, and thankfully I got
therapy
over.
Through after therapy.
I think therapy and
stifling, shoving, you know, all the types of therapy.
But I used to get really freaked out driving over bridges, like bridges over large bodies of water used to freak me out.
You have a heights thing?
I used to have a heights thing too, but I don't know, all that stuff went away, but I was kind of mildly freaked out the last time I was in San Francisco because they have the new Bay Bridge.
Yeah.
Watching the new Bay Bridge get constructed and seeing those giant cranes with the little pods imagining being up in the pod that fucking high up freaked me out. That new section of the Bay Bridge, and you look over to the left and it's the old dilapidated section of the Bay Bridge where it's just in chunks now and there's just vehicles on there and you're like, they're gonna fall off. Like, it's so fucking terrifying.
That is really terrifying. They're selling that steel to China, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, I read up on that. They're like taking it apart and then just shipping it out. They're selling it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, they got to do something with it.
Yeah.
And China's going to smelt it. Is that correct?
Because China's...
The
one that dealt it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to that faster than I was. That's what I was... I was about to build.
Thanks for finishing.
Like, you know the Chinese proverb, blah blah blah. But yours is much more economical.
Yeah, that's true. This is a 7-year work relationship, and that's what.
I can't compete. I was going to go to the reference wall in a second. You guys didn't come up with anything.
Let's go to the hashtag reference wall today.
Rhoda? I don't. That doesn't even.
Yeah, but it is. I've been working out with the same trainer for 10 years.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. And
that's good.
And it really helped sort of change my life. And I got really, you know, I've been really, and I love going in. And even on days when I don't feel like going in, I like going. I still go in. And
do you have a certain time always, or does the time?
Yeah,
change?
It's Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays.
And it's the same time, because I'm just wondering. I'm also like the key to things. I wonder if one of the keys, like, to keep doing your projects is to really have a set schedule. You know what I mean?
It really helps. It helps. Yeah. It helps to be accountable to someone else. And it helps to have it be the set time so you don't have to think about it. The less you have to think about it, the more you have to think about it, the more you'll talk yourself out of it.
Yeah.
The less you have to think about it, the more it's on autopilot. You just go. And now it's been so long. But, you know, we were talking today about how many different clients have come in. And they get, you know, it's like the dude that gets super excited.
New Year's resolutions.
Kind of New Year's resolution energy where you're like, I'm so excited, I'm going to do this.
It's
and you
the
get
same
in.
Thing you were talking about with new projects, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a month or two, I feel great. And then all of a sudden he's like, then I just never hear from them again. And then a year will go by and they'll be like, hey, man, you know, I got real busy, but I'm ready to do it this time. And I said to him, like, you know, I actually don't know what it was about. I go, I'm surprised that I followed through. Because before, in the Peter Hardwick days, I was not a follow-through guy. And somehow I became a follow-through guy. And maintenance, because everything in my life right now is kind of is running. And it's, there's not a lot of room for brand new stuff. And so it's just sort of like, okay, you know, I just got to
You're all about maintenance now, right?
I am like, most of my life is basically just maintaining what I have and trying to improve on it and not not get so overwhelmed with like with new relationship energy, new project energy.
Yeah. Do you get, because I also think this might be the personality kind of disorder we're talking about, but do you get overwhelmed occasionally?
Sure.
Like, whoa, like this is too much.
I do.
And you just want to retreat. You just want to retreat.
I call it ostriching, where you just want to put your head ostriching. Or just like you get overwhelmed by everything and then you put your head underneath a pillow and take it.
But I do have a thing for, I do have the best way that I figured out how to deal with that, which is you have to shrink everything in your life into manageable moments, right? So you get overwhelmed because you think of everything at once.
Yes, and that is the bitch about how to stop your mind. For me, how to stop your mind from going too far into the future. Because if I'm like, holy shit, you know, I'm going to have to go to London in May, and here we are in March, and I'm freaked about it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to think about it. Like, when you project into the future is when you get fucked, I think.
I think you just have to get done what you can get done in a day.
Today, yeah.
Yeah, I think years ago I read the Dale Carnegie book. One of the Dale Carnegie books said something about...
Is that about making steel? Like how to monopolize the steel industry?
How to tear down bridges and sell them to China. And so... It was something about living in day-tight compartments and the idea of just being like, you know, like get done what you can get done in a day. And you have to be forgiving with yourself a little bit and going
Absolutely.
Like, you know... Because most of the time you will catastrophize. Like, if I don't, then everything's gonna... But usually things don't completely fall apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as long as you can manage what you can get done in that day and then just get to whatever you can get to in the next day...
Well, right. Is a lot of the stress that maybe it's like, you know, you're afraid if you don't constantly think about all the things you need to do, you're going to forget one of the things.
Well, it's
and
also,
then it's going to be one of those moments where you're like, fuck, I forgot to, you know.
Well, there's also a superstitious thing that I think where people feel like they have to be in chaos to make everything okay.
Now, that's an interesting one. I don't know if that's superstitious. You said a superstitious thing?
Well, I think it's a little obsessive. I think I think superstition is an offshoot of OCD, you know, where it's like, oh, if I don't do this, then these horrible things are going to, you know, I don't do
religion.
This.
Yeah, yeah.
Well. and so I think...
Interesting, though, that people feel like, and I probably suffer from this shit too, but like feeling like they need to be in chaos. Like, what is that about?
Some people
like
only,
if they're not in chaos, that means nothing is happening.
It's a familiarity, you know? It's a familiarity. If people, when you talk to people who thrive in chaos and you start poking around and you go, what was your childhood like?
Right.
Oh, my dad wasn't around or my mom really had issues and I never felt stable, you know?
Did you just walk out of the theater?
Oh,
by the way, for me to call this a theater.
but it's, you know, it's people crave familiarity more than they crave almost anything else because you just... You know,
it's like, weird to feel safe in chaos, which is basically what you're saying. You know what I mean?
Some people do feel very safe in chaos, and so they need it, so they create it. And also, creating chaos gives people a sense of control because if you can just knock stuff off the table all the time, you're essentially controlling the situation because what happens? You're controlling the outcome, and also other people typically have to deal with you. Do you know what I mean? Like they have to, you are in a sense manipulating people into your chaos because they have to, oh, you dropped this here. Let me fix. Oh, you like, it's a very powerful, creating chaos is actually a very powerful manipulation tool.
That's crazy.
Here's the other thing that's hard to do day to day is also the ability. This is for me, like the ability to say no, ability to say no to people because it seems that everybody wants something from
you. Especially with what we do when you don't know when you're going to work and you sort of live this kind of nomadic lifestyle and it's like you're a hunter-gathering and then someone comes along, they're like, hey, do you want this? To say no is weird for us.
Or can you do this? Can you do this? You would be great for it. Like all this stuff.
It's good to say no, though. No is a very powerful word. Not just for yourself, but for the, in, you know...
Perception
the,
of you?
The, well, it, but I mean, in the sense that, you know, if you have time, if you spread yourself so thin, then the quality of everything you're working on overall is going to suffer a little bit because you're just not so learning how to say no is very powerful.
It really is and just being and it seems that it never ends
even though you keep saying no and it is good to do it. It seems that just more it just never ends the amount of people
if you do say
them.
Yes to if you say yes to everything people will unintentionally take advantage of you and your time because they sort of feel like oh he'll do you know like
and so then oh, well, if you're here for 4 hours, can you be here for 8 hours? And can you come back tomorrow? And then You know, if you're the type of person that
yeah.
wants to make everyone happy.
That's the thing. Yeah, I've got that.
And they're not malicious to doing that. They just like,
no,
it's like the
no,
same
no,
kind of
no.
thing. It's like, you know, it seems okay. So they ask for yeah. more and it seems okay. So
yeah, so it is good. It's mm-hmm. good for yourself to say to, you know, to sort of figure out what your boundaries are and what you think you can take yeah. on. And but I think the overwhelming thing, you know, if you're super overwhelmed, don't think about the month ahead. Don't think about the week ahead. Don't even think about the day ahead. Just focus on what you can accomplish in that moment.
Yeah,
and just
absolutely.
do a thing. And then the accumulation of those things throughout the day, then at right. the end of the day,
right.
oh, you will have accomplished a bunch of things. No. Rather than just being in this inert
yeah.
state.
Worry.
Of,
just being
worry.
In worry.
Then that's where, you know, I said this in my book, and my therapist has said this a million times. She says, worry is a misuse of your imagination.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a waste of creative energy. Because you're creating scenarios.
True. Yeah.
And you could be using that creative energy to solve problems or yeah. come up with other things. It is creative energy. It's just a creative energy that's attacking you.
Do you, you know, they're starting to say that there's no such thing as multitasking. And do you agree with that? Is that kind of what makes that thing work, where you just focus on the one thing at a time?
I think it depends on how you define multitasking. I think there are certain, I mean, obviously, you know, you can be checking the news, answering emails, sending someone a text. I mean, I do think, mm-hmm. however, that human beings cannot focus on any more than one thing at a time.
Yeah. Really. Well, that's the thing. When you're sending a tweet, you're not paying attention to the news.
Right.
It's like, that's a separate thing.
Here's what's even more important than that is that when you are, and I do this shit too, when you're watching the news, sending a text, checking email, they say what it's doing, like people who are now studying this shit because of the internet and all this shit, is that it's rewiring our brain and really giving us intense ADD. In other words, like by doing that stuff all the time, it makes it harder for us to really just zone in and be like, okay, I'm going to write a fucking, you know, I'm going to write 30 pages for 2 hours without checking anything. You know, and a lot of people do that. Like, people are like, oh, fuck, I got to write a book. I love when people go, I'm not going to be on Twitter till, you know, May 1st. You know what I mean? Like, I always like, shit, I can't afford to do this. Like, I always panic about not being on
Oh, yeah, no, my girlfriend
Twitter.
Says that to me all the time. She's like, so we're going to go on a trip one time, and I'm going to get you to leave your phone at home. And I'm going to go, well, you are not going to get me to do that.
But what if? What, like,
I know. I mean, and she's right, by the way.
Yes, she is.
But I start getting panicky. Like, what if the car breaks down? Or what if we need to?
And I think that's your brain, like, being, like, addictive. You know,
of course it is.
Your brain's like, no, but what if something goes wrong with my brother? Or
because she's right. I don't need to take it everywhere. Of course I don't need to take it everywhere. You know, but I think what you do, anything you do with any degree of regularity forms the habits and the patterns in your life. And so the bad news is that you can develop a lot of bad habits without realizing what you're doing, because you really kind of have to stay on top of it. It's maintenance.
Yeah.
But the good news is that you can learn new patterns and you can learn new habits. It does take a little bit of work.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. But I'm just saying that I love all that shit. Like there's something, and they've talked about this too, you know, in the brain, like, again, it's the new shit, like on Twitter, like looking at the notifications and going, holy shit, this person, holy shit, Larry King likes my thing or whatever. It's such a rush, you know, and you know, Larry King, that just was part of the reference world, but
you know who loves your stuff? Jill Clayburgh loves your tweets.
Rhoda?
No, that's Rhoda's
no,
that was, Valerie
I was
Harper.
Doing a callback to another.
But it's all these, like, just stimuli, just rushing, you know, whoop, stimuli, and it's like we can't be without stimuli.
I keep saying, you know, that our brains are not, if our brains, technology and the way that we exchange information now, I think, is beyond where our brains were actually evolved to handle all that
absolutely.
Information. And so I think that's why so many people, I mean, you know, when I was growing up, and I'm sure it's just because people didn't talk about it as much, but I would venture to guess that there's probably more generalized anxiety and depression than probably at most other times.
There is, by the way, again.
Because I think we just can't process all the information that we're trying
to
process.
There are studies that people, and it's in more developed countries, depression is on the rise.
Yeah,
like, people are less happy in wealthier, quote unquote, wealthier societies because of all
this
stuff.
Yeah, things are very efficient, so they have more time to worry. You know, they're not busy trying to make money or doing stuff. Like, they can get stuff done quicker, so they have more time to think and be introspective, and then that bums a lot of people out.
also on top of that, it's just too much for the brain to handle. I think
that's
it's also
what I think
and
it
you're
is.
Constantly seeing what other like other people that are doing better than
there,
you.
That for me is a big one. Like that motherfucker.
Yeah.
How the
and it could
fuck
be anybody.
Does he get a pilot on a travel show? That kind of thing. No. That was not meant for. That was Convy. Bert Convy had that many years ago. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's like, what? I mean, how come Hollywood Reporter is doing an article on that person? And it's done in that voice.
You know, it doesn't.
Definitely. Don't tell Eddie about my shit, Kyle. How dare you talk about my
shit? Kyle. I'm sorry.
There's no one.
I noticed I didn't get a call for that.
But I think, and I think, it, I think it's also why. I think it's also why.
I called you on the last pilot, motherfucker.
Oh, you did!
Yeah.
You did! You did! That didn't go, so no, I don't blame you for not calling me.
That's right.
Eddie, stop squeezing the air out of Jonah.
I forgive you.
I think, you know,
That was my first spit take in a long time.
That's a good spit take.
I just spit coffee. I have not done a spit take since the Stooges marathon a few years ago.
Since the great Stooge marathon of 38.
Hosted by
Bert Convy?
Yes.
Okay. I do think that it's also part of the reason why time is moving so fast because we're not perceiving the passage of time because our attention is always focused on something. And so we're just all of a sudden days turn into weeks, turn into months. And then, you know, it's March of 2015 already.
And then days are multiple days now. Like everything's being divvied up until like when you heard about something. Like last week, there was the llama chase. Everyone blew up about the llama chase. Like these llamas are out on the loose. People trying to, and then all of a sudden it was the dress. Is it black and blue or is it gold and white? And that was like two huge events that happened on the same day for the internet. And then like, I talked to people who like, the next day, couldn't remember when which one happened or how long ago.
Oh yeah, because
people
couldn't
figure it out
because it's all basically all short term. It's all short term memory stuff, and you get caught up in it, and then the next day your attention. I mean,
I'm reading a book right now, which is amazing. It's called "Amusing Ourselves to Death."
Oh yeah. I know that book. Yeah,
and oh my god,
it's an older book.
This guy wrote. Yes, I was just going to say that. This guy wrote it before the proliferation of, you know, this stuff on the internet.
Yeah,
I mean, he just basically was writing about our culture turning from a print culture into a visual, you know, TV culture. You know. And this was hilarious to me that the Lincoln-Douglas debates, just to give you, you know, he's talking about like shortened attention spans and nothing has any context anymore. There's no continuity to anything. There's no depth of thought. But just check this out. The Lincoln-Douglas debates for the president used to go on for 9 hours. They used to have breaks to take dinner. They used to have breaks to take dinner, and everybody would come back and listen to them. Sometimes the debates would go on for a couple of days, and people were interested. Now a presidential debate is a hilarious soundbite exchange.
Yeah, it's all soundbite.
Nothing.
Yeah, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Exactly, about the Mideast.
Yeah.
You know, you have 30 seconds.
Well, I think it's not good what's happening. Time.
Shit!
Things are a bit more complicated than that, but
yeah. You know, Mike Furman and I tried to hit as many of the Lincoln-Douglas debate spots in Illinois.
That's great.
I was going through some old pictures, and I have pictures of us in front of a couple of the different sites of the Lincoln-Douglas debates, like pretending like we're debating. It was so much fun.
Yeah, and like no one anymore has a sense of history. They don't have any sense of history. Like I was thinking, this is a bit I do, and sorry for doing this on the air, but a bit I do is I go, folks, because of the internet, Twitter, Facebook, and all this crap, you know, our attention spans are nothing. Pretty soon, a history class in this country will be like this. All right, everybody. All right, class. Today we're gonna have a pop quiz on a very important time in our history. I'm talking about a half hour ago.
Yeah.
A half hour ago was an incredible time in our history. Let me just give you an example on a Twitter feed here of someone called Don't Look in My Basement. He was at the O'Hare Airport, and he saw someone drop a sandwich at Quiznos, and then a baby fell. And that will be on the exam. Like, we're just concerned with trivia.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. We are absolutely concerned. Absolutely. And I get these. If I watch a show, which, you know, like some type of a frontier type show or a travel show where people just live in a, in a cottage somewhere in the middle of nothing and raise their own everything. Mm-hmm. The part of me gets these little butterflies where I'm like, that looks so nice.
Same here.
That looks so nice. Where you're just a self-sustaining entity where it's like, you know, you're there, you're with your partner. Maybe you have kids, maybe you don't have kids, but the...
I call them partners, too.
Partners. But your animals produce
so progressive of you.
Everything you need. You got your vegetables. Yeah. Yeah. You don't, like, just being a self-sustaining entity and not relying on anything other than just sort of, let's just...
Do you ever, like, dream, like, getting older and having, like, a bug-out town? Like, it's like, oh, me and my partner got a place.
I was just telling Kyle that right before the air, that, yeah.
Oh, yeah?
I just keep envisioning.
Did he tell you about my bug-out town?
Detroit's kind of a bug-out town. Yeah, well, Lydia keeps, you know, like, we'll spend... like an hour or two just looking at ranch properties.
I think a lot of people do that stuff.
She's like, I want to just buy a ranch someday. And it sounds awesome. But, you know, I definitely...
That's what Harrison Ford does. Redford. They all buy these huge ranches in Montana.
Galifianakis.
Galifianakis. Well, yeah, that was in North
Carolina.
Stanhope.
Right?
Yeah.
Doug Stanhope.
Doug Stanhope just lives on his ranch, though, right?
The idea, isn't it?
Yeah,
oh, I see.
I totally get it. I really, really get it. Absolutely. I look at some areas around the Midwest and the Pacific Northwest, and just kind of, you know.
I'm looking at Pacific Northwest. Yeah,
I'm thinking like north of Santa Cruz, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's a nice little.
Oh, right up around the border. There's some good stuff up there.
Somewhere where there isn't a drought. Like here, we live in a fucking drought, which is scary.
Yeah, it'd have to be not here.
Yeah, I remember arguing once.
Yeah,
the first place I ever bought was a condo in West Hollywood. Probably in 2003. And I remember arguing with an insurance agent because this was such fucking bullshit. I was technically in a flood zone. And so I had to buy flood insurance. And I was arguing with an insurance agent. I go,
in West Hollywood?
I go, Southern California is a desert. And this woman in Texas goes, California is not a desert, sir. And I go, don't you fucking tell me what. We are a desert.
California.
It almost. I'm almost never rains here, and it is a desert. California, Southern California is a desert.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be as green as it is.
And I love insurance companies, by the way. They're terrific.
Flood insurance. I had to buy flood insurance. It was on the second story of a condo. Flood insurance.
Did you ask her to try and buy some tsunami insurance?
No. That's good. Tsunami was not a buzzword in 2003. Otherwise, that would have been a good comeback. Yeah,
was it a buzzword? It's just the thing.
But it's a thing now, but it wasn't like tsunami warnings.
They happened. I got off of school many times growing up because of tsunami warnings.
Well, you lived in a very foreign land. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what the hell you're talking about.
It's a state of these United States.
Well,
sir.
Not really.
I mean, you know, anything
taken by force.
That's right. It is kind of hard to believe that at the beginning of just last century, Hawaii was not a state.
Yeah.
It wasn't until halfway through that, like, okay, you can be a state now.
No, it didn't really go down that way. But you seem to want it real bad. We'll give it to you. What are those cannons? Don't worry about those. No, they're not pointed at your queen.
American foreign policy is never really nice.
And now, Eddie Pepitone.
What were those guys, the Capitol Step Singers?
Eddie and the Pepitones.
Eddie and the Pepitones. There it is. Yeah.
It's just Eddie singing up front and then a bunch of guys in the back going, God damn it!
Twitter has rewired our brains, and ice truckers suck.
Damn it! What's the old bit? The guy having flashbacks while singing, like crooning.
I do a bit where I'm a lounge singer who's having Vietnam flashbacks, and it's sort of like, there's a bird that's coming in my window. Get down, Frankie! And that bird is the best little thing. I love you so much. No, Frankie! I can't believe I lost my best friend. There's my just the guy who goes back and forth seamlessly.
Doesn't it go so far as you're like, and that bird is, oh my God, Frankie, you're my best friend, and I'm holding your fucking head in my hands.
Yeah, that's right.
And then I'll interrupt that and go, where are you from, sir? And then I'll go back to holding the guy's head in my hand.
How is your voice holding up?
Dude, I actually actually remember talking to you about the voice thing because you were, I don't know if you still do a lot of singing, but we were talking about this and you recommended Slippery Elm lozenges, which I have.
Yeah.
It holds up. It's actually been pretty good because I did a long run in Edinburgh, which was 25 shows and 26 nights. It's a crazy – I'm not doing it again. This is the second year I did it. And those were hour-long shows. And the first time I did it, near the end of the run, I had no voice. I went to yell at my wife and nothing came out. and that was the scariest thing because I couldn't defend myself. I couldn't
Jesus.
But I do a lot of throat coat tea.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of that. I bring that on the road, fucking – talk about superstition. I am paranoid if I'm in, like, Scotland or, like, a long run or even doing a headlining gig. You know, I have to have, like, a shitload of that stuff.
Well, it makes it – you know, like, it kind of makes it less fun and sexy, but you should – be doing vocal exercises. Like, you should get
a
vocal coach.
I've done those too. I've done those too.
Because I know it's more fun to just be like, I'm just yelling and it's raw. But the first year that we did the podcast, we had Ozzy on. I went to his house and podcasted him. And as I was leaving, he was like, all right, I got to go up and get ready for a gig. And I heard him doing vocal exercises.
Oh, wow.
And they were very classically trained. He was going, meow, 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 meow. And it just sounded so... Just seeing, again, maintenance, what it takes to make, you know, like the older you get, the more work you have to do to create the illusion of seamlessness.
Yeah. Right.
So it's, you know, it's unfortunate. When you're young, you can just go yell a lot.
And I don't do those vocal lessons as much as I should. You know what I mean? I don't. And again, that is the maintenance stuff.
I don't get to do much music stuff anymore because... Mm-hmm. Between At Midnight and I work on a video game and a cartoon and my throat gets so shot and the stand-up that I can't really sing. I want to make weird country songs and I can't because my voice holds up for like one song and then
I just start doing a different kind of singing. Do country, like do like Johnny Cash or maybe just kind of quiet or some of that.
I hurt myself today.
There you go. There you go.
You can still say.
I don't know how to do that. Do you still do vocal lessons? Or
no.
I mean, do the exercises?
I had a great vocal coach that Ricky Lindholm turned me on to. A guy named David Corey, who was great. And before I shot my special a few years ago, I was going to him for a couple months because I was terrified that the night of the special, because I've been doing so many shows, I was going to be like, thank you for coming.
Yeah.
I think I heard happened to Jeff Garlin. Jeff, I heard.
What? Yeah. Recently?
Blew his voice out a few years ago.
It's when Dana did Let Me Put My Thoughts in You, that special that Odenkirk ended up directing. It was because Dana was opening up for Jeff Garlin, and Jeff Garlin did one night. And then blew out his voice and couldn't do the next night.
Whoa.
So then Dana just did a long set. Bob Settle had all the equipment there.
Whoa.
Taped it and then put it out as a special. But
whoa.
Yeah.
And Garland, I don't think Jeff screams a lot. You know what I mean?
But he's always at that high register.
The high register.
The incredulous. That's
and there's nothing scarier for a performer, man, than to lose, because that's what we have.
Yeah.
I mean, when, oh my God, when my voice started to go, and I think I had like a week to go in Edinburgh. I was just I was literally terrified, you know?
Literally terrified. It's like if you were Louis Armstrong and you had a trumpet and you were like, but if you play this trumpet too much, it's going to disintegrate. Yeah. Oh, shit! So you have to be very careful. You have to be very careful.
Yeah, when I was on tour a while back, three shows in, it started going. And I saw George Carlin perform in 2007, I think, and... He did this thing. No, it's 2004. But he did this thing where he kind of lost it and he kind of got a scratch in his throat. And he lost his place in the bed.
Oh, flat Coke.
And then flat room temperature Coca-Cola. He said that's what Pavarotti told him about.
Flat room temperature Coca-Cola.
It's a quick fix because it's just kind of the syrup kind of just coats
George
it.
George Carlin, drink the Coca-Cola.
Who's that?
Drink the Coca-Cola.
Ice truckers are going down the highway. He's not around anymore, right? Did he die?
Pavarotti?
I think he did die. Kyle?
I think he's gone.
I think he might be gone.
I think he's gone, but anyway.
Is Pavarotti dead or alive? He's a cowboy. So what's next, Pepitone?
Well,
is a special coming out?
In Ruins is out?
In Ruins on Netflix is my big thing, and it just went to iTunes, and I'm excited about that. But In Ruins on Netflix has been a really cool thing for me, you know? Really cool thing
Netflix
for me.
Netflix is a really... It ended up becoming a fantastic platform for comedians.
Yeah.
Because obviously the challenge is... How do people find you? How do people discover you? And, you know, when your special airs on TV, maybe it airs once or twice.
Yeah.
And then maybe not again for months, or maybe at 4 o'clock in the morning. But having that Netflix suggestion engine hey, here's a new special by Eddie Pepitone.
Or just anytime anyone sees you, hey, you like me? Go watch it. Because they can just go and watch it.
Right.
And it's just this, the ease.
And now it's gone to iTunes, too. So that's... I'm going to the Punchline. I'm going to headline the Punchline.
San Francisco?
March. Yeah. Right.
I always
there's
think
two.
There's, I always think there's one Punchline.
Yeah, it's San Francisco.
San Jose, right?
Are you going
back to England?
Yeah, and I'm going to do the Soho Theater in May.
That place is great.
Oh, that's right.
It was so nice to see you because, you know, being in another country and seeing somebody from the hood is nice.
Yeah, it was awesome. Then we got dinner afterwards. It was a blast.
Yeah, you were just going. Were you on your honeymoon?
It was like the last night of our honeymoon.
That was really sweet. Yeah.
That's a cool neighborhood, but at night on the weekends, it turns into like fucking drunken club
drinking
fest.
Is an Olympic sport in the UK in general. Yeah. In Edinburgh during that festival, I just call them the bobbers and weavers. They weave and sing.
No, even the Olympics only happens every 4 years. Like
that is
a nightly activity.
Absolutely, yeah.
They know how to drink, man. They really do. Yeah, it's kind of fun to go back there and be reminded, like, oh yeah, this is why I don't do this. But then you pass like a really charming pub that's been there for like 300 years.
Yeah, I know.
It's the only time I've ever
heard for history.
And then all the shit in your head is like, yeah, but this is how they socialize, and it's a great way to socialize, and it's a deep, deep culture of socialization. Yeah. And I should be part of this. I'm not getting the UK experience.
And they wrap it up by 10 p.m. It's great. It's the perfect setup.
Someone told me that they have to close the pubs early there, or else no one will be in work in that country.
I'm sure.
Well, you know, there was a huge protest. They were going to stop allowing drinking on the tube, and like
on the
tube? Yeah, people were going like,
"You could drink on the
tube. you could drink anywhere. You could just walk up another street." I walked like I had a pint glass, walked from one place to into another place, and I was like, "Is this wrong?" And everyone's like, "No, no one gives a shit. Everyone uses the same pint glasses. No one cares." And you were allowed to drink on the tubes. And they were like, we're not going to allow that anymore. And people were like, that's ridiculous. You're taking away our rights. Mm-hmm. There was a huge protest about it.
And they're talking about all types of tubes, like CAT scan tubes, all kinds of tubes, capillary tubes.
YouTubes.
They did it, and like crime and sexual assaults went down astronomically. Like all crime stopped on the tubes because people weren't like allowed to just get drunk and be wasted and like fuck things up.
Interesting correlation.
Wow. Yeah. There was a town in Brazil that's
Freakonomics.
There was a town in Brazil that stopped. Last call was now at like, I think like 8 p.m. And same thing happened. Like crime went way down.
It's almost like a percentage of people don't understand how to behave responsibly when consuming large quantities of alcohol. I don't know. It's crazy.
That is a great thesis you have there.
Just something I'm noodling around with.
Noodling.
But you got to be careful, though, because you don't want to, you know, as an ex-drinker, you don't want to, you don't want people to feel like you're going, hey, because I can't drink, you guys can't drink.
Yeah.
But seriously, a percentage of people should not fucking drink.
Very true. I've never, like, you know, it's like the worst thing that, like, happens. I never got like violent or I didn't whenever like getting drunk. I never want to run around and like do stuff. It's like I just want to keep on chatting. That's like the biggest, like I get drunk and I was like, no, we're all like, let's just keep on chatting.
So no, Clayburgh was great in this other film. Yeah.
So I had this dream where I could turn into a whale.
Jesus Christ.
Here we go.
Come on, Dr. King.
You're carrying around a dream catcher with you. Yeah. Just in case I pass out anywhere, I'll get the dreams.
And then we'll take a verbal slideshow of all of my dreams. I kind of don't remember them anymore.
Dreams?
I just have like pieces.
That's actually good, I think. Because I think if you're really sleeping deeply, your anxiety level, I think that's where exercise also comes in. Like, you know, you're kind of really nice and tired and because I think your mind needs to rest.
I woke up at, I passed out at 11:30 last night. I mean, like, I had like probably like a
is that early for
13
you?
Hour day. It's about average.
Me too.
I woke up at, Lydia and I both woke up at 3:30 in the morning and just couldn't go back to sleep. So we just hung up. But I had to get up at 7:45.
So what'd you decide to do?
We just talked, Jonah. Yeah. We just had conversations.
Wow.
It's not.
Tell me more.
So we talked. We just hung out for a bit, and you know, like,
Did you get up for some water?
Yeah, I did.
I
was all up in that water, Jonah.
Hey,
what?
That's gross.
What's wrong with fucking a water? I was just getting some Arrowhead. Come on, guys.
I like that. That should be their campaign.
That should be get some Arrowhead for the road.
Yep. And then basically it's a bottle of water and you slowly push your head down on the bottle of water. You push your own head. You push your own head down onto the water. Like, oh, okay. Yeah.
Arrowhead never asked for a return in the favor.
You won't have to worry whether you spit or swallow. With Arrowhead, it's always swallow.
No, well, I don't know about our new campaign. The really conservative Arrowhead guy.
What are you talking about?
I don't understand.
It's sexy.
No, the spit or swallow thing. I don't know.
Well, hang on. Wait, hear me out.
It's a sexy campaign. People want sex in their water.
It's a sexy campaign for a sexy world.
I just think we should go with makes you come quickly. I think we should go that Arrowhead, it makes you come quickly. if you know how to do it right.
But we basically just stayed up until like 6. And then I fell back asleep for an hour and 30
That's when the
minutes.
Dreams happen.
Yeah,
when you wake up and then fall back asleep is when the dreams happen.
Yep.
Is your brain starting to go?
Also, when you're traveling, like when you come back from travel, lots of dreams. I don't know about you, but like you come off the road, just like lots of dreams, or even when you're
no,
on the road.
I don't know. I just
you don't do it, huh?
No.
Good for you, I think.
But I was
the guy who's not sure about anything. Good for you, I think.
I'm not sure. That must be great for you, I'd imagine, I think.
I'm positive this will work out, maybe. Could be. I don't want to commit
to the world's
anything.
Worst life coach. I think you should.
I mean, I don't want to take any heat if I'm wrong. So
I'm happy for you, unless I shouldn't be.
Give me a reason. Just give me a reason. So In Ruins is on Netflix and iTunes.
Yes.
And what else? Where else are you going to be performing besides the Punchline?
Doing the Punchline. Then after that, I am going to Moon Tower.
Oh, yeah, in Austin.
Yeah. That's
sweet.
That's going to be fun, yeah, in April. I think that's it.
I don't think I'm doing Moon Tower this year because I think I'm doing a run of shows in Texas later in the year.
Oh, cool. And I'm excited about doing Jonathan Katz live at Moon Tower.
Oh, yes. That's going to be great.
Yeah. So I'm kind of excited about
that's
that.
That's rad.
Sure, man.
That's really, really cool.
I've never met him. I didn't do the original
show. Oh, he's really nice.
Yeah, I hear.
He's a good guy.
And I love that show.
Yeah.
So that's kind of exciting.
Katz is great. London, and then you survived Edinburgh. Jesus Christ. Do you get to day 17 and you're like, I'm only halfway there?
Oh, dude, yeah. And talk about that whole thing we were talking about before, about staying in. You know, tell me if this is true. As you get super busier, you have to learn how to stay in the day or you will go insane. I mean, and that's a perfect example, like a long run like that. And if I start going, oh, my God, this is only day 17. I have to go to day 26. I'll go nuts.
Right.
I have to go just like, okay, let me have dinner. Tonight,
right,
yeah,
and fucking take it from there.
I'm telling you, a lot of the overwhelming thing will go away if you can just be present in the moment.
Yeah,
you know, you just sort of release everything, but just that one moment, and it really does help.
Yeah,
because that's what you can. That's all you can do. That's literally all you can do.
You know, there's a guy. I don't know if you read this book. I forget what it's called. Oh, fuck, I wish I could remember. He's a newscaster. I don't know if you've heard of this book. Anyway, he had a fucking panic attack on the air while delivering the news, and I wish I could Google it. And it got thrown to him. This was at the beginning of his career. His name is Dan Harris. I forget what news, but he's written a book now, and he basically says that if you meditate and stay in the moment, you will become 10% happier. he's not like promising like total enlightenment,
right?
But he got so consumed with just, you know, the rush of doing the fucking news and being like, you know, an international correspondent, that he just fucking blew his mind out, you know. Fuck. And on the air, he had a literal fucking panic attack. Oh,
I love the way you described the panic attack once, which was like getting fucked in the heart.
Yeah.
You used to remember?
I did, yeah. You know, and I was saying, I would say that at shows, and it was a polarizing bit because the people who understood it, who had suffered anxiety, would laugh really hard. But then most people don't have it, and so so it was just kind of head scratchy for most people, and they didn't really understand it. So I kind of just bailed on it. But it was that is the best way that I can kind of describe that feeling. And it, you know, and it almost tricks you every time. You're like, no, I know the other times were not real, but I think this one's real. And that's sort of the insidious nature of it.
Yeah,
because it's dealing with such
been having a couple lately.
Well, because you know when you take a step back. You know, it's like Tom, the trainer. This trainer that I work with is like,
exercise is good for that.
It's good, but it's also like kind of taking a step back to a more global view of your life. Because a lot of times you get caught up and you're like, I don't know why I feel so. And you take a step back and you go, okay, you're getting over a cold. You're working on three things this week. You had some weird dietary change. Your partner is taking a job, and they're at, like, when you start looking at all the pieces,
reasons, reasons that you're,
because you're so caught up in putting out the emotional fire that you forget, like, oh wait, that's probably because this changed and this changed, and I have to do this and I have to do this, and even just kind of recognizing that, and you go, ah, okay, so this is just a temporary thing that's it's just symptomatic of all of these things at once.
Right.
So knowing how much stuff you're doing at once, it's actually not surprising. So.
Oh, I didn't say I had.
Oh, but I felt like you were suggesting.
No, I said my friend has been having a couple.
Yeah, weeks. I'm sure. Yeah, Joni, no, you can talk openly.
I've been getting overwhelmed. Like, but you were saying, I am. I have been getting close.
This
This
friend of yours, does he buy a lot of records?
he does too. No, but I don't think
I'm sure he does.
Yeah. No, I don't know if I've ever really had a full-on panic attack.
Because
it's
like, good. Well, you're Hawaiian. Because
like, you're Hawaiian. Way
back kind, better. No worries.
There's no panic over there. I just was in Maui, baby.
It's great. It's great there. The thing is, it's like I always thought that maybe I had panic attacks, and then like hearing multiple people describe what it is, I go, maybe I just get a little stressed and
I can get them in like on planes. Like I have a little claustrophobia. Like sometimes when I'm overtired and I'm traveling, I'm really susceptible when I'm overtired and my body, and I feel a little shaky from not sleeping.
Your defense mechanisms aren't up.
And then I'm like, oh Christ, this is the inner panic attack.
So you're gonna take care.
They're closing the doors on the plane. Why is that guy coughing next to me? Jesus Christ, I forgot to call Bob about the goddamn fuck. Never went anywhere in my life.
It goes meta after that. Like,
I never did anything with my life.
But it feels like you're dying.
It goes right to that, like, horrible, you know.
Yeah.
What did you just say?
It feels like you're dying, right?
Yes, me.
It feels like something is wrong and you can't identify it, so your brain goes into... Like, I gotta get up and run around in circles mode. You know, it's like... I something's happening and I don't know what it is because you can't, you know, there's a series, you know, there's actually like a bureaucracy to a panic attack because there are a series of points where it,
I'm sorry, ma'am, we can't let you completely flip out until you finish this paperwork.
But I mean, there are a series of escalation points. Yeah. Like you don't always just go from zero to I'm freaking out. It's just like, it just, you know, your brain kind of checks to see what's going on. If you can't identify it, it goes to a second stage. Then you start feeling worse, and you're like, okay, well, what if this doesn't stop? And, like, it gets more complicated.
What if this doesn't stop is a great way to describe it.
What ifs are I've determined that what ifs are the worst questions you can ask yourself.
Yeah.
Because you never ask what if for a positive outcome. It's what if this is catastrophe? What if I die? What if this happens? Mm-hmm. What if that?
Boy, and they are the great, again, you know, going back to that theme, they are the greatest thing that says, okay, just breathe.
Yeah.
Like instead of fucking worrying about all this shit.
If you can let everything else go. Because I had a therapist once tell me that, you know, again, this goes back to only being able to focus on one thing at a time. if you can slow your heart rate down and focus on your breath, you cannot simultaneously be relaxed and be in panic mode at the same time. It's not physically possible. So if you can just slow your heart rate down and focus on your breathing and just stay in that moment and not take on, you know, even if you're just focusing on slowing your, you know, like slowing your breathing down, then you can a lot of times pull out of it.
Yeah.
So good luck with all that.
Thank you for the brown paper bag to breathe in.
Does that work?
So people say it does. I have not used that because I feel too embarrassed to be like on the 405 sucking into a brown paper
bag. Brown bagging it? Like, what's he doing? Drinking out of a bottle?
Sir, huffing. Pull over. Oh, no, not the cops, too.
Oh, this, you're not helping. You're not helping.
Right.
Put the bag down.
You don't want that at all.
I just need someone to talk to, officer, about my career. Don't we all, pal? Put your hands behind your head.
I got my headshots in the trunk. That's the officer. The officer. Cool, man. Yeah, good to see you again.
Thanks
for being here, Eddie Pepitone.
You're welcome, man.
I'm sorry we never solved the mystery of the inflatable mom.
I think the Hardy Boys.
The mystery of the inflatable mom, the Hardy Boys.
The Hardy Boys. Yeah, we didn't solve it. Well, that's all right. Good night. What? What do you mean? Well, maybe I want to mix it up a little bit, Jonah.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine with it. Which is taco, tostada, gordita.
Enjoy your tostada.
Crunch, Mexican pizza.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are also going to be Taco Bell items.
No, some of them are El Pollo Loco.
Okay. Enjoy your burrito bowl. You know, for everyone who's trying to trim down, enjoy your burrito bowl.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of Nerd.
I feel like I was blindsided
because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor,
we have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT. Stream free on Amazon Freevee or Prime Video.